just make everything quantifiable, everything measurable. It's good for our processes. It's good for training VAs, and it's also good for teaching students, because no one wants like a hazy, like, you know, maybe. So I kind of look at it like that old adage. If someone can't explain it to you simply, they don't know how to do it. You know, so if you ask someone, hey, what are the five drivers of a market? What websites do you go on? What boxes do you need to check to see that this neighborhood is good for where you're looking? Most operators have no idea how to do that. They're just going off, oh, a realtor told me this was a good area. Or, you know, I have another deal nearby and it's pretty good.
Welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
Jonathan Farber started investing when he was 22, and after a lot of experimenting and speaking with mentors and taking action, he achieved financial freedom at age 27 through real estate, specifically through Airbnb and wholesaling. Jonathan, welcome to the show.
Appreciate you having me on. Excited to be here.
Hey, man, the pleasure's mine. Same three questions I ask every guest who comes on the show in 90 seconds or less. Can you tell me, where did you start? Where are you now? How'd you get there?
Okay. I started in Raleigh, North Carolina, with a strategy that a lot of your listeners may know or maybe not, house hacking. I was hooked. I was in a corporate job making pretty good money out of college, but I did not like it. There was a big layoff at the company and I felt like I needed security. So started the house hacking route. When I lived for free that first month, that was kind of like my light bulb moment that this was possible. How I tactically started with that, it was just really speaking to realtors, looking at houses. I really didn't know what I was doing. But yeah, that was it. I started with house hacking, got my next deal, then one after that, and just started to kind of roll them together. But yeah, I was hooked. And it was like, how many of these do I need to become financially free? My goal is 30. I was able to kind of get lucky and do it at 27. So that was the start. House hacking multiple times in Raleigh, North Carolina.
Interesting. When you say your goal was 30, you meant by age 30, achieve financial freedom. Has that number, not your age number, but has the term financially free changed for you the more success you've had?
That's like one of the biggest things I think people make a mistake with, is thinking that financial freedom is actually their salary, when in fact, it's just your cost to live. So financial freedom is just based on whatever your cost to live is. You could live on $1,000 a month, or you could be a baller and live on $30,000 a month, whatever it is. You know, I make more money now than I've ever made. And I live in Colombia. My living expenses are like $2,000 a month. So, you know, it all depends. There's different levels of financial freedom, where maybe like stage one, that you just cover your living expenses, basics, and then you can improve that, scale that, do more things, have a family. I'm a single person. I don't have a family. I don't have a dog, you know, whatever. It's just me. I'm just married to the golf game right now. So as long as I could join a country club wherever I live, I'm happy. And as long as I could buy the best equipment and have the best coaches and all that, like, that's what I need. I wear the same shirt every single day. It's a shirt that I can golf in, or work out in. I'm a minimalist. So I just like, any time in life that I can buy simple, I'll pay for it. So for me, if I can buy simple and time, that's how I'm achieving financial freedom. I don't cook. I get every meal delivered. I get all my laundry done for me, massage to the house. Anything you can think of to buy time, I do it. Personal assistants, virtual assistants. I just want to focus on what I like to do and what I'm good at. Now, at the beginning, I couldn't do that, but I had to buy more of that time and simplicity back. And yeah, same thing. Even when we set up a property in the US, I'm not there. I'm not the one finding it. I'm not the one designing it. Virtual assistants are doing the analysis of it. I give the direction. I give the final review. But for me, that's financial freedom at my level. You know, I make more and more, but I just live on the same amount. If I needed more to live on to be happier, I would just do it. I don't want to think about money. So it definitely changed up. My original financial freedom number was like 2,500 when I was living in Raleigh, and I was living like peasant, but you know what? I loved it. It was what I wanted to do. And I wanted to get to that number to leave it. But now it's, you know, when I go back to the US, it'll be more, which is kind of why I was here over the winter. But yeah, so it changes for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and you know, there's always that, the idea that the more you make, the more you spend. And you know, there's that scope creep that always just tends to like go along with rising income, rising expenditures, rising lifestyle. And I just wondered how you combated that. And it sounds like you've done that fairly well, but yet at the same time, protecting the things that it's most valuable, I think, to all of us, which is our time. So tell us about your use and scaling your company with the use of VAs. I mean, I know this is a virtual assistant, or I think the new term is virtual professional, whatever it is. you know, you've done this, and we've talked about this on this show, you know, previously, but I love hearing real world stories of, hey, this is how I've done it. Here's the mistakes I made. This is what I've done right. Walk us through, especially, I mean, as you're acquiring, underwriting, sourcing property, I mean, that's a pretty robust system. Talk to us about that.
If anyone has questions, just feel free to hit me up. All my socials, I'm sure, will be linked in the show notes. I've probably hired, trained, and kept or fired probably about 100 VAs in 7 years. Could be more, could be less. But really,
that's more than one a month.
Yeah. I mean, you know, now we have like 8 that are just like, you know, with us. I would say that's the number consistently across everything between property management, acquisitions, social media, personal assistance, and then just filler tasks for our communities and things like that. But, you know, for me, it's like, I would love to always try to, you know, at the beginning, I was thinking, I'm not going to have enough work to give a VA. That's the complete wrong mindset. If anyone is listening to this right now, you couldn't be more wrong. One, you can give a VA an hour work a day. You could say, I'm going to pay a VA $6 an hour, 1 hour a day to just analyze deals that get sent to me every single day. You know, I need to film Loom videos and do step-by-steps of how to do it. They can't just do that for you. They need instructions, but that's anyone. You know, you needed instructions too when you were figuring out how to buy a house. You couldn't just wing it. And a VA can't do that either. So that's where most people go wrong. But for most people going wrong, as far as like the setup, it has to do with just not thinking that they have enough work for one. If there's anything that can be done on a computer or a phone or any editing, anything just like digital, it can be done. So for me, I started small. It was just with small tasks, things that I didn't like doing, I wasn't good at doing, and just scaled it from there. It was easy just starting with like, for real estate, for example, podcasting. You know, like we got our podcast production down to about $12 an episode. We did a daily podcast for 250 shows. So I didn't know how to edit, but all I wanted to do was do the video. But we had VAs doing the guest outreach, the editing, the production to social media. The only thing I wanted to touch was the actual conversation with the person to build relationships. And I love that, but I didn't like the other shit. Same thing with real estate. I don't like analyzing deals. I just like relationships, creating content, you know, building systems, coming up with a better vision, that sort of thing. But you know, the day-to-day, I don't want to be on call. That's just not what I want to do. It's not a good use of my time. So what I would say for anyone is start with one task that you understand how it works, that you can just come up with a checklist of the steps, film a Loom video. Loom, we use 20 times a day in the business. We don't have meetings. We just do Loom videos. It's the best thing ever. And just walk through the steps. And when you walk through the steps, you could just send that to a VA. As far as where to find them, two places, very simple. Or you can go with an agency. So you can go with Upwork, which is free and then just paid per job. You can go with Online Jobs PH. It's about $50 a month, but the talent is awesome. And there's tons of little bells and whistles that you can tweak to find candidates. And then if you want to pay an agency, which in a lot of cases, it could be a great thing, hit me up. I have a whole freebie on it, just of all the agencies that I recommend too. We have guides for all this stuff. But you know, there's 24/7 US virtual assistants, there's Belay, and they can do the training and the hiring and the interviewing for you. They'll bring them to you and they're still like maybe $10 an hour. And some of those are US people, or it's maybe $20 an hour for higher skilled work. But these people are impressive. And it just became a game for me of how to get more stuff that I don't like doing off my plate and how to use my time better. But all that stuff can be outsourced. I remember on Bigger Pockets once, I love Joe Fairless. I mentored for him. But someone on his team commented on one of my Bigger Pockets posts once. And I was like, hey, has anyone heard of outsourced deal underwriting? I really hate the process. And I got crushed. This was like 4 years ago. I got crushed. All these keyboard warriors coming out of the woodwork. One of them was Joe's friend on his team. And they were like, that's just stupid. It's not possible. I'm like, you're stupid. You think Bill Gates scales a company doing everything himself? He's got 400,000 employees. You think Jeff Bezos is screwing bolts together in a factory? You don't understand business. You need to scale with people, systems, processes, operations. So like, yeah, I mean, hey, I'm a solopreneur, but I love having just outsourced contracted labor. I don't want employees either. But you know, there are people that are competent and can do these jobs. I mean, it gets me fired up. It's just funny, but it's just like, do it. So that's what I would say. Start with one task, a small, simple task. It could be creating a banner for your Facebook group or your Facebook profile or Instagram posts, if you want to grow your social media. We just hired a full-time social media manager. I started with one task on social media, create banners for my Facebook groups. And I was like, that's kind of cool. I don't know how they did that, but it just scales. And then it's like, you figure it out. So, but hit me up. If anyone has questions, again, I'm really into it. So I love it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's a great way to build, like you said, one, to offload tasks that you don't need or should be doing or want to do. I mean, that's the thing. It's not even, I think it goes beyond even want to do. It's even what's the highest and best use of your time. It's like this, you need to focus on, you know, revenue creating, value creating tasks inside your company, not creating banners for Google or for, you know, your Facebook, whatever group you were talking about there. So that's really, really important. I love that. How have you strategically, I mean, there's a lot of art in underwriting deals. And I think that's maybe where you got the blowback, right? Where it's like, oh man, like there's as much local knowledge, there's as much interfacing with the realtor, figuring out, especially if you're doing Airbnb properties, what the demand generators are. Like, how do you overcome some of those more subjective things in underwriting a deal and then teach someone else how to do that?
So one thing that I always try to do is just make everything quantifiable, everything measurable. It's good for our processes. It's good for training VAs. And it's also good for teaching students because no one wants like a hazy, like, you know, maybe. So I kind of look at it like that old adage. If someone can't explain it to you simply, they don't know how to do it. You know, so if you ask someone, hey, what are the five drivers of a market? What websites do you go on? What boxes do you need to check to see that this neighborhood is good for where you're looking? Most operators have no idea how to do that. They're just going off, oh, a realtor told me this was a good area, or, you know, I have another deal nearby and it's pretty good. That's bullshit. So, you know, originally with this, I was following Neil Bawa. He's awesome. I would say I'm, you know, more into Airbnbs and furnished rentals just for the returns. Neil is amazing. I would aspire to be like Neil, but in the short-term space. Neil Bawa, he has virtual assistants run his multifamily business. He's got a couple of US-based managers, and then a lot of his operations is run by VAs. But yeah, as far as like how to underwrite a deal or analyze an area, it's really just coming up with that process. So for me, as far as like analyzing, again, this is furnished rentals and Airbnbs, we have a process to just scan areas off 10 different criteria. So it's like, how many drivers are there in an area as far as colleges, natural attractions, parks, hospitals, new development, new hotels, things like that. So we have maybe like 5 to 7 of those drivers that we'll look for in an area. And what we ideally like to see is, you know, new construction of hotels. So we'll keep all that documented and kind of just like a step-by-step sheet if we're looking at a new area. So how many new hotels are being developed? How many reviews do the current hotels have? Call the hotels and see how booked they are in peak season. Speak to the person, see if you can get a room for 30 days, 60 days, 90 days. A lot of times you can't. Then we have a process to look at comps in the area. We like to find the top 10 comps in any area to see what they're charging per night and for how long. If their calendar is blocked off, we'll reach out to the host and see, is it blocked off because you're staying there? Do you have an off-platform booking or is it an extended stay guest? And from there, we have a good enough. And then we also have a deal with AirDNA where, you know, we have a country license and we can look at a lot of the revenue. And, you know, that's just basically like a data scraper. It's probably equivalent to like, what's that multifamily tool?
CoStar.
It's equivalent to CoStar. Yeah, exactly. So between those things, and obviously there's some more detail to it, but we just want to have a process that's measurable. Are there multiple hotels? Are there attractions that have over, let's say, 100 reviews? Are there other 10 other really good Airbnbs in the area that you can model and comp and look at their calendars? And then from there, what's AirDNA saying? And then running the actual numbers on the deal, they can all do that. What I usually do, the one thing that's not, I would say, as measurable, and this is just a little thing, is they usually, you can't really measure like design elements. So if I say this house is nice looking, or, you know, it's designed well, that's tough to quantify. You know, we could go through it and say, do you think the finishes are within 3 years old? Does it have quartz countertops? Does it have laminate? You know, is it well kept in front? To me, that's not worth it. I will still go through the pictures of any property that gets reviewed or submitted, and I'll yay or nay those at the beginning. And then those will go off. If I favorite a property, it'll go off to VA and then they'll look at it and they'll do the analysis. But the analysis doesn't take that long. It just, again, going through a checklist, and then we'll talk to a broker, then we'll talk to a property manager, and we'll get a feel for the area. And then usually if we need to, if we want to get a property under contract, we'll offer first and then someone will go see it. And then, you know, that sort of thing. It's not need to see it first before offering, which I know is a little different than other people.
Right. Yeah. I wonder, well, there's a question that goes along with that. Do you get blowback when you make an offer before you see it?
No. Honestly, the thing that I see, no, and this is just like a tip that I had to learn, and I think a lot of beginners get wrong, is the only blowback I see working with brokers is just ghosting them when they send you a deal. You know, like people think, oh, I'm going to hurt the broker's feelings if I see a deal that's not good and I don't want to tell them that. Like, tell them that. Right. Like, they need feedback. I was like, eh, I don't want to hurt their feelings. No, that's bullshit. Let them know the numbers don't work. Send them back the analysis. If you send them back the analysis and tell them why, they'll actually respect you more because now they know you have deal criteria. Right. But just not responding, no. But brokers, I found, it's the opposite. They respect us so much more the second we start making offers. They're like, this person's serious, not another tire kicker, you know, out of state investor. So any deal, we send them our pre-approval or our lending docs. We send them a screenshot of our bank statement showing we have cash. We're ready to go. And then when we get a deal, within 24 hours, it's sending back why I like it, why I don't like it, and let's keep moving, you know, that sort of thing. Tactical.
Fantastic. Absolutely love that. Talk to us. One more thing I want to, you know, highlight here before we have to sign off, which is monetizing social media. That's something else that you're known for. And a lot of people, especially in the commercial real estate space, really struggle just getting content out there. But talk to us about what that means for you and how you do it.
First thing, and these aren't like strings attached asked, if anyone is looking for a social media manager, I just did like a round of hiring and I have like probably 8 that were great, but there was one that I had a better connection with. So I can recommend and introduce, you know, your listeners or you. I'll probably just make a social media post about it the next week. But yeah, if you just DM me or say like social media manager, again, one of my assistants can tee that up. Again, not me, because it's just great to have that, you know, but we'll do it because it's good value. But they were great people. So get help. Like what I have found is most real estate operators, they're great at real estate operating, horrible at social media, horrible at marketing. Like it's just cringe. So get help. Like stay in your area of expertise, buy skills, and buy leverage in places that you can just get better. So yeah, first off, social media is crazy. I started it originally with like Joe Fairless when I was like, all right, syndication, podcast, I got to raise money. Did the daily podcast for a long time, started a Facebook group, stayed super consistent. Now it's just trying to do more on everything and just trying to cultivate where the attention is, which 2 years ago was like TikTok. And I know TikTok, it's a weird thing. It's a kid's place. It's girls dancing. It's all this weird crap, but it's where attention is. So I just started going hard on TikTok. And again, it was simple tips. It was, here's how you find a realtor. Here's how you analyze a deal in 60 seconds. It was, you know, here are the 5 areas I'm looking at and why. Super simple stuff that like most operators with experience would roll their eyes at. But the beginner or the person who's in their job that they hate is like, I love this guy. Right. And within 3 months, that account hit 100,000 followers. Okay. So it goes to 100,000. Then all those people start going other places. They start touching other parts of your brand, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, other places that you can monetize. And just by having now, I think about 150,000 on TikTok, maybe like, and again, I had 2,000 followers on Instagram last year or a year and a half ago this time. I had no TikTok a year and a half ago this time. Now, Instagram, maybe like 28,000. Just from brands and affiliates and sponsorships alone, I make about $8,000 to $10,000 a month just for making 5 videos, just for a brand that says, hey, shout us out. That's crazy. Or we'll have an affiliate link for a product that I already use, like AirDNA or a course that I took on Notion or productivity. I just put it in my bio. Every couple of days, someone buys it. When they buy it, I get $200-$300. That's just for having a brand. I like money that comes in while I sleep. Right. If it's through real estate, if it's through affiliates, if it's through content, whatever. If it's from cutting up clips of this podcast, these are going to be 50 TikToks, like literally what this is. So it's that sort of stuff, repurposing. But yeah, I mean, then it's sponsorships for Facebook groups, sponsorships for a podcast, AdSense from YouTube, all these things. Like, we have a high ticket program for teaching. We have a low ticket program for teaching. And then the sponsored stuff, all because of social media. And again, I was adamantly against social media like 2 years ago. I was like, that is so weird. Like, this dude is trying to be an influencer. Now I'm like, it's easy money. Like, it's money that you could just make. So I'm still scratching the surface. I have friends that are making $20,000, $30,000, $40,000 a month from like five posts. And I'm like, what is going on here? They have bigger followings than me, but I'm like, why not just do that? Like, take that money, invest it in real estate. Like, that sounds pretty good to me. Like, I know how the real estate works. Like, I'm learning more about social media, but why not? And so my advice for that, I don't know when this is going to be out. We're filming this March 15th, 2022. Make 3 TikToks a day. It should be prioritizing your business. I have a calendar event on my calendar every day. Make 3 TikToks. It doesn't matter what I'm doing. That is one of the biggest drivers for me financially. Anytime I don't make TikTok, I don't think about it like I'm not making money. I think about it, I'm losing money.
Right.
Because even my video on TikTok gets 800 views. That's 800 new people that see my face, 800 people that could give me money to teach them or invest in a deal or to bring me a deal or partner in a deal. You want attention. Attention is currency. It's like, you never know who can help you with what. So social media, I think, is a beast. If anyone is against it, get help, hire somebody, or just buck up, start creating TikToks or YouTube. YouTube is phenomenal. We're doubling down on YouTube and TikTok just for repurposing. There's so many repurpose potentials in those. And that's pretty much it.
I love it. Jonathan, thanks for taking the time to come on today and just share us kind of your behind the curtain secrets of what it is that you are doing, you know, scaling your business with the use of virtual assistants and monetizing social media. There was so many things in there that, yeah, were just absolutely awesome. So thanks for taking the time today to come on. If our listeners want to get in touch with you or learn more about you, what is the best way to do that?
Probably Instagram. On social media, everything is just John J. Farb, JONJFARB. Shoot me an Instagram message. We give away most of our templates, how to analyze an Airbnb. We have a lender comparison. We have a market comparison template. We have a furniture checklist. So we give all that stuff out just in return to hopefully get more followers on the stuff on the channels. So hit me up on any of those. If you just maybe even Google my name, Jonathan Farber Real Estate. We have a website, you know, probably the last place I check of everything in our like thing. But yeah, we just try to create content, and our whole brand is, you know, how to get someone their first Airbnb deal in 90 days. Totally doable. But yeah, all those platforms. So hit me up. Love interacting with people and seeing if we could help.
Awesome. Thank you, Jonathan. Have a great day.
All right, Sam. See you later. Thank you again.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate podcast. If you can do me a favor and subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen. If you can do that for us, that would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much, and hope to catch you on the next episode.